argument now in the case of Primeval Group against Steel Dynamics. Mr. Riso.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Gerard Riso. I represent the appellant. The issue involves what we believe is a very important issue of accrual under the Indiana fraud statute of limitations, and how do we measure accrual. In this case, Your Honor, appellant sued Steel Dynamics, Inc. for fraud and constructive fraud for false statements that were made way back in 1998 and 1999, and the complaint was not filed until January 2008. The district court, in its February 2009 decision, sustained the validity of the fraud and the constructive fraud causes of action against Steel Dynamics. However, the court found that the complaint allegations in and of themselves led to only one conclusion. That conclusion, according to the district court, being that by no later than July 1999, the board of directors of the Thai Steel Company, and I'll refer to them as NSM, should have known the falsity of Steel Dynamics' claims with respect to the integrity and the design of the steel mini mill. We believe, Your Honors, that the district court erred, that the district court applied the wrong standard in analyzing the allegations of the complaint. The complaint did not plead us out of court, as the district court found, on the statute of limitations issue. Rather, the complaint pled numerous detailed allegations so that a factual issue could be established as to when the NSM board of directors, in the exercise of ordinary diligence, could have known that the injuries the company was suffering in 1998 and 1999 were the result, were caused by, the fraudulent and false statements by SDI with regard to the design of the steel mini mill in Thailand. Your Honors, in a decision rendered by this court in 1995, Horn versus A.O. Smith, this court stated that in determining the issue of ordinary diligence, one must look to the position of the plaintiff and the knowledge of the plaintiff at the time and when it knew what it knew and when.
Your problem is that a corporate officer's knowledge is imputed to the corporation, and it seems to be uncontested that the corporation's CEO knew, or at least believed he knew, that Steel Dynamics' statements were incorrect. Why isn't that the end of this?
Well, Your Honor, because this case presents a very unique factual situation. In connection with the $500 million public offering in the U.S. markets in March of 1998, NSM was required, the Thai company was required, to give away full management power over the operations of the company to a United States entity, NSM Management, which is controlled, we assert in the complaint, by Steel Dynamics. So the CEO.
Maybe I'm missing this, but you're not addressing my question. My question is just a matter of normal agency principles. The knowledge of an agent is imputed to the principal. The principal here is the corporation, Steel Dynamics. The agent is the CEO. Why isn't that principle applicable?
Your Honor, at that particular point in time, the management, which was John Schultes, didn't have managerial authority over the company.
My question has to do with law.
Yes, I understand.
It doesn't say our case has particular facts. I'm asking a legal question, and if you have a legal answer, I would appreciate it.
Yes, the legal answer, I believe, Your Honor, is that at that point in time, Steel Dynamics was the expert.
Let me try once again. What case do you think I should look at for the proposition that the knowledge of an agent is not attributed to the principal in circumstances of the sort you are urging? What case establishes that proposition, or what statute establishes that proposition?
I cannot offer you that, Your Honor.
Okay.
I could only offer. Excuse me?
Are you saying that John Schultes, isn't that the CEO who wrote the letter saying disagreeing with SDI?
Yes, John Schultes was the CEO who wrote the letter disagreeing with the design flaw assertions.
But he was the CEO.
He was the CEO.
Was he in some diminished capacity or irrelevant capacity that wouldn't put him in that legal position?
He was the CEO, but we believe he was in an extremely diminished capacity because the full managerial control did not rest with Mr. Schultes. It was by contract in connection with the offering.
You see, that just sets up my question. What case, what Indiana case, says that as a matter of Indiana law, if an agent acts in a diminished capacity, his knowledge is not imputed to the principal?
I don't have that case, Your Honor.
In any other jurisdiction?
I don't have that case.
How about in the restatement of agency?
I don't have that.
Did they establish that proposition?
Not that I'm aware of.
All right. So you're asking us, effectively, to change state law or to establish a principle of law that, as far as I know, is unknown in any of the 50 states. And that's normally not something a federal court does in a diversity suit.
Your Honor, we are asking under these particular peculiar factual situations, circumstances where the CEO did not have control over the company, that the imputation of his knowledge should not end the issue of the ordinary diligence. The district court analyzed the issue of ordinary diligence with respect to what the NSM board of directors knew, not what NSM management and its corporate officers knew, because I believe the district court accepted the theory, at least, that by reason of the contractual right to NSM Management Company, controlled by SDI, to manage the company, that SDI was in effect replacing management with people in management that would agree with its assertions.
Does that include the NSM board?
That did not include the NSM board. However,
why didn't they react?
Well, the NSM board had, as we allege in the complaint, limited powers. They had no right to overstep the management of SDI at that time.
What if they believed Schultes and said, gee, he says this thing's ready to go or it doesn't have nearly that many problems? Did they have any skin in the game? Did they have any reason to protect themselves or the investors or whatever?
Well, I think they do, and I think the question is whether or not a jury could find that they acted reasonably in siding with SDI at the time. I mean, SDI...
Just caving in and saying, hey, we got to get bail out because this thing isn't going to work.
Well, SDI at the time, they were the world's expert in the operations designed to steel mini mills.
That's only in hindsight. Obviously, they were dead wrong.
Obviously, they were dead wrong, but we have to examine the position they were in and what they knew at the time. And I think a jury could find that the NSM board did not act unreasonably in siding with SDI in its feud with Mr. Schultes. Mr. Schultes was not the expert. SDI was the world known expert. This was extremely new technology at the time, and SDI was known to be the best operator of steel mini mills at the time, and they had just been brought in as the strategic partner, and query whether it would have been reasonable for the NSM board at that time not to side with SDI. The whole purpose of SDI's participation was to give comfort to the investors in the United States who had just put in $500 million into this company and to ensure that the management of the company would be controlled in the United States and not in Thailand.
The opponent says this is really a tortious interference case.
Yes.
And it only have a 2-year statute of limitations.
Correct. And we believe that the district court correctly rejected that argument and found that the complaint, although the complaint does allege that the bondholders, the investors, relied to NSM's detriment on SDI statements in restricting and then seizing the cash accounts, we also make very clear in the complaint that NSM and the board relied on SDI statements regarding the design flaws and then taking the course that it then took. So it alleged, the district court found that the constructive fraud, because we did plead the elements of a confidential relationship between NSM and SDI, was legally sufficient, and we believe properly found, because the fraud claim is legally sufficient, the court had to apply a fraud statute of limitations. To do otherwise would, in effect, constitute a judicial repeal of the 6-year statute of limitations in favor of a 2-year statute of limitations applicable to another claim. And, Your Honor, I think another interesting point is whether or not NSM would have even had a legally viable tortious interference claim, because a central element to that claim is that the actor doesn't act with justification or for a legitimate or business purpose. Although we contend that SDI hurt us in what they did, they were certainly acting for their own business purpose to avoid the financial consolidation issue that we lay out in the complaint. So I don't see how the district court could have applied a cause of action after finding the fraud and constructive fraud claims legally sufficient and then apply a statute of limitations on a claim that, as a matter of law, NSM probably would not have been even able to plead.
It's only passive, but even with the 6 years, it was patently obvious, in what, in 03 or something, that they were dead wrong. This operation's going full speed, everybody should have known by then this was that was an error, and if there was any fraud or there was a cause of action, the court observed, said, why didn't they do something? And you seem to say, well, you were handicapped at that point because of bankruptcy or something, and you couldn't do anything.
Correct.
Is that right? Because when was the assignment in, I've got here, August 27th, 06, when this Prime Eagle actually got the assignment?
Yes.
Is there something you couldn't do before then? Or was it set up just for the litigation?
The assignment was set up to investigate whether there was a viable cause of action to pursue.
And it's so late. What your investigation shows is some other people really should have known a long time ago.
Well, if you accept the theory of the complaint, that being that until there was this contradicting expert report, which was not rendered until August of 2002, that there could not have been knowledge that the expert design flaw claims of SDI were incorrect and, in effect, fraudulent. If you accept that theory, then I think the court has to run the 6-year statute of limitations from that point. And I think that's what's unique about the Indiana fraud discovery rule, because the 6 years, and I think the court held this expressly in Horn, the 6-year period doesn't begin to even run until the time the plaintiff knows or could have known, not should have known, could have known that its injury was the result of a tortious act of another. So, yes, people should have known, but the question is, when should have people have known? If people should not have known at any point prior to August 2002 when the Corus report was issued, then we respectfully submit the filing of the complaint in January 2008 is timely because it's within 6 years of the point we contend that the statute of limitation period began to run for the first time. And I think when you look at the position the NSM board was in and what it knew when it did, and the fact of that this plant was not operating from early December 1998 all the way through 2003, and that they were subjected to a bankruptcy court, a plan administrator, the dictates of the bondholders who were owed tens, hundreds of millions of dollars, this is not an NSM board that could have done whatever it wanted to investigate. There was no money. And it was only when it became contemplated that money could be raised in the Thai markets to see if this factory could get revamped that the new expert report was commissioned. So based on that, I think there is an issue of fact where a jury could find under the Indiana discovery rule that we could not have known prior to that point. And that it's not an objective reasonable board. I think it has to be a board in these circumstances.
I don't understand what significance the board has. I just come back to my initial response, which is that an agent's knowledge is imputed to the principal. It doesn't have to be the knowledge of the board or the chairman of the board. Any agent will do. I've just finished reading online the entire treatment of this subject by the ALI's Restatement Third of Agency, looking for limitations. And the restatement makes it perfectly clear that the board's knowledge is irrelevant under common law, and that it makes no difference how a corporation structures itself internally. That is, a corporation can't, by its internal structure, give itself an advantage against third parties by denying that critical people had knowledge. Now, maybe Indiana doesn't follow the restatement. That's why I began by asking, do you have an Indiana case that supports this? Do you have a case in some other state that supports your view? But you seem to be urging us to operate in some kind of law-free zone.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think this is John Schulte's knowledge. I think this is John Schulte's belief. This is an expert issue on novel technology.
Oh, look, as I said, I'm asking questions about law. I'm not asking for you to restate the facts of your case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gindler.
Good morning, Your Honor. David Gindler for the appellee, Steel Dynamics. Counsel for the appellant began by saying that the allegedly false statements were made in the 1998-1999 time frame, and the lawsuit was filed 10 years later, in 2008. But there is no dispute that the statute of limitations for a fraud claim is 6 years. So that leads to the inevitable question, 10 years is a little longer by, say, 4 years than 6 years. And how do we get to a complaint which could possibly be timely? And it takes a fair amount of factual and legal gymnastics for them to get there. What counsel for the appellant said is that the district court found that by July of 1999, NSM should have known of the falsity of SDI's claims. That's actually not what Judge Moody found. Nor would that be the standard. What Judge Moody found was that by no later than July of 1999, no later than that date, NSM was on inquiry notice. They knew enough so that they had to investigate. There was enough there, and that's what starts the statute of limitations. They knew enough that they had to investigate. That's what Judge Moody said, and that's what's supported by all of the case law cited by both parties. Your Honor, the standard that would be applied by the appellant is truly an actual knowledge standard. One of the last things that counsel for appellant said is that the statute of limitations should have started to run around 2002, which is when NSM got around to hiring an independent expert, a company called Chorus, to conduct a review of the NSM facility and make its own independent determination as to whether or not the facility was sound. That report came out in 2002, and the report said the facility is sound. That is when the appellant says the statute of limitations should start to run. That is an actual knowledge test. In other words, the statute did not begin to run until NSM was actually in possession, knew every single fact that supports its cause of action. And that's not what the General Assembly of Indiana decided, and it's not what the Supreme Court of Indiana has decided, and it's not what the Seventh Circuit interpreting Indiana law has decided, is the test for how you determine whether or not a claim is timely brought within the 6 years that the General Assembly decided applies to claims for fraud, even though, generally speaking, the rule in Indiana is that 2 years apply. For fraud, you get 6 years. Not 6 years to wait, to languish, to sit around. 6 years because there may come a point where you are on inquiry notice. And at that point, the statute begins to run. And you have 6 years from that time to figure out if you have a claim and to file the claim. That's an awfully long time. And, in fact, here, I think there can be little doubt, because of the facts that Judge Moody recites in his opinion, that NSM was on inquiry notice in the 1998-1999 time frame, and I believe Judge Moody gave every conceivable inference to the plaintiff, to the appellant, by using a July 1999 date. He chose the latest possible date. That was the date by which two things had happened. First, the bondholders formally foreclosed on the trust indenture, as opposed to just freezing the money. The second thing is that there were no SDI people to be found anywhere near NSM, even though the agreements had actually been terminated 7 months earlier. On December 30th, 1998, there were still, I believe, two SDI people trying to help mop things up in the first 6 months of 1999, but they were gone. This is in the complaint. They were gone by July of 1999. So, to indulge every factual inference, the court used that date.
Looking at the 2002 report, which I haven't studied, so maybe you can tell me, did it disclose all that had occurred earlier, or did it get into any of that?
Your Honor, because this is a motion to dismiss, I am constrained to rely upon what the complaint says, and only what the complaint says.
I guess that's a fair answer, but it seems that because the judge commented, it said even at that point you had 3 years.
That's correct. What the complaint alleges is that the Corus report said that the mill was sound, that the defects that SDI claimed existed, in fact, didn't exist.
That's the allegation.
Maybe
this goes too far, but did not exist at the time they said they did?
That's correct. In other words, there was no change in the mill because the mill basically went into complete shutdown. So by 1999...
And 202 is as is then.
It's basically as is. The mill was in complete shutdown. If anything, as alleged by the plaintiffs, the mill had deteriorated somewhat because it was not in operation. So by 2002, when NSM still had 3 years in which to bring its claim, it did nothing. And not just any claim. Not just a claim that maybe you might bring, maybe you wouldn't bring, you'd have to give it some thought. This is a claim which the complaint alleges, very early on in the complaint to get your attention, that this is a claim for $1 billion. You know, even today, I think $1 billion gets people's attention. And so if in 2002 they realize they have a claim that's worth a lot of money, someone might actually stand up and say, maybe that guy, John Schultes, who we hired as chief executive officer and who said that SDI was completely wrong, maybe there was something to that. But you can go even further, because the complaint also alleges that the mill ramped up and was running perfectly in the last quarter of 2004. And they still had 7 months when their plant, they say, is just churning away, working perfectly, still had 7 months to bring the $1 billion claim. And they didn't bring the $1 billion claim.
Well, they claim, and maybe you're not familiar with that, but they said that you were handicapped for some reason by the status of the bankruptcy or something or other.
They do, in fact, say that. What they say is, I think, two things, to be fair. They say that because the bondholders foreclosed on the indenture, that they didn't have a lot of money at the time. And the second thing that they say is that they were now within the Thai equivalent of bankruptcy proceeding in Thailand, a rehabilitation proceeding is, I believe, what they call it. But I'm not aware of any case law, and they have cited no case law, that statutes of limitations depend upon how rich or how poor somebody is, how much money they have, and someone was running the show at NSM even when the company is in rehabilitation. There's still a managing agent. There's still an obligation if you want to bring a claim in the United States, in Indiana, to comply with the Indiana statute of limitations, which all parties have agreed for purposes of this case, is the applicable rule. The most one could do with these facts, and to be fair, the appellant doesn't quite make this argument. The most you could do with these facts is put them into a legal box called equitable estoppel, that for some period of time, they get a break on their ability to bring a claim. But what the case law is very clear on, and we've cited this in our papers, and I need not repeat it, there's a long discussion of this, but briefly, what the case law says is not that the limitations period then starts anew. It says you must bring your claim within a reasonable period of time once the disability goes away, once you have the capacity to do things. Well, this is just such a case, because in 2002, 3 years before the limitations period expired, this company knew, at least according to the complaint, it had had an excellent mill, not the mill that SDI criticized, and they knew 7 months before, at least 7 months before the expiration of the statute of limitations, that their mill worked, actually worked. And they had 7 months to sit down at a computer with their word processor of choice and draft a complaint. And still they didn't. Statutes of limitations don't exist to excuse delay. Statutes of limitations exist for a variety of reasons. They bring repose. They encourage parties to act within a certain period of time. And they establish a framework that the General Assembly has said is enough time for somebody to investigate once there are enough facts before that person to create the duty to investigate. And I think here there is no argument that can be made that the allegations recited in the complaint created inquiry notice. They started the limitations period to run. You have 6 years, because we know from the complaint that before the offering, Mr. Bussey allegedly called the NSM mill an A+. In June of 1998, while criticizing management, he said the core facility was essentially sound. But in August of 1998, SDI's counsel informed the bondholders and the board that the mill was essentially a complete mess. And then on September 7th, less than a month later, Mr. Schultes wrote a blistering response in which he disputed every single thing that was said. And then SDI had to go to the board, which, as Judge Moody recites, has 14 members, only one of which is an SDI representative, to make its case that Mr. Schultes should be removed. And that happens on September 28th of 1998. And then in October of 1998, there's a meeting of bondholders at SDI's facility where Mr. Bussey again criticizes the mill and says that the cost to repair the mill is in the $100 million range. These facts, at a minimum, put NSM on inquiry notice. They had 6 years to figure out if they had a claim, and in fact, according to the complaint, they did figure out within that 6 years if they had a claim, and they didn't bring it in time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.